Good morning. As introduced, I'm Emily Duncan, and I'd like to talk to you today about my research on manure application in the context of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. As Xavier mentioned earlier, this is a crucial point of research for folks living here. You can see in this map, Penn State is located in the upper reaches of the Bay watershed. However, everything that we do all the way up into New York State is contributing to quite a small body of water in the Chesapeake Bay. So with that, I'd like to introduce the two manure application methods that we're using. So a little bit of background information. On the left-hand side, we have shallow disk injection, and on the right-hand side, we have the more commonly used broadcast application of liquid dairy slurry. And with shallow disk injection, there's a cutting wheel, as you can see in this graphic on the bottom left, that slices a slit into the ground, followed by liquid dairy slurry that is then dropped down through these hoses and followed by closing wheels. And you can see the difference in the soil surface in the two pictures, where we have a more uniform cover of a liquid slurry on the right, and then there's barely any disturbance on the left-hand side of the picture where you can see the injection equipment has run through the field. And so these are the two methods that we've been studying on my field site at the Penn State Agronomy Farm in central Pennsylvania. And to provide a brief overview, I've talked about some of my previous work at these conferences in the past, mostly dealing with gaseous emissions, but I am trying to monitor nitrogen at all these different pathways of loss. So we have ammonia volatilization that we've measured and nitrous oxide emissions that we've measured. We're also monitoring surface runoff and subsurface flow, so we're looking at nitrogen and all these different pathways, as well as soil storage and crop uptake. So today I'm going to focus mostly on the water aspects of it, but I'll give a quick overview of some of the atmospheric emissions findings that I've discussed in more detail previously. So on the top, we have two pictures of nitrous oxide sampling, and on the bottom we have ammonia volatilization measurements taking place just after manure application. And the biggest takeaway messages we have from this slide is that injection of manure will significantly reduce any ammonia volatilization loss. And this is fairly well known, but we are just adding and contributing to that data set. On the top, we have an investigation of nitrous oxide emissions coming from injected manure. And so the concern with that is that when we're injecting a liquid slurry into the ground, we're creating microsites of anaerobic activity. So there's high carbon substrate for microbes to feed on, as well as anaerobic conditions. And so we did find slightly higher, or sometimes greatly higher, nitrous oxide emissions from injected manure than broadcast. But in the grand scheme of a balance and a budget, which is part of this project, it is on the scale of grams per hectare per day loss, whereas ammonia volatilization is on a kilogram per hectare per day loss. So those are the main takeaway messages from my gas emissions research. And as I said, today I'm going to be focusing more on the water movement and on the water balance of the site, which is the underlying theme of trying to monitor nitrogen at this field site. And so in the top left, we have a layout of the field lysimeters. We're calling them field lysimeters because they're each of these 12 plots are hydrologically isolated, which I'll get to in a minute. I have treatments labeled here, but they're going up on a hill slope. And this cutaway demonstrates what I mean when I talk about a field lysimeter. So each plot has berms that are isolating water from moving downslope, and all the water, surface water, is being collected in drains, surface drains, and all the subsurface water is being collected in tile lines that are running at the bottom of each plot. So all of that water is then routed into a collection house. These are the collection houses at the bottom, and this is a view inside one of them, where the water is collected and measured using a tipping bucket system. So we can get a total volume for every precipitation event of surface water and subsurface flow, or shallow lateral flow. However, as with everything, it's not perfect. And so that is what I'll be talking to you about today, is trying to figure out where is the water moving if it's not being collected. And you can see in this image, we have little cartoons of maybe cracks in the bedrock, and so I'll get into some of that here as we move forward. So, as I mentioned, water budgeting. So we have on the left a pie, a rough estimate of where we think the water is going. So whether it's in surface runoff that we're collecting, shallow lateral flow, evapotranspiration is a huge chunk of that. There's also a chunk that we can't account for in storage or deep percolation. And so through our monitoring and through the years, we've realized water is moving to other locations within the hill slope, and we need to have a better understanding of where it's going to try and enhance the research that we're conducting on these field scale lysimeters. And again, we're collecting the surface runoff and shallow lateral flow from these two outlets. And to give an idea of this variability that we've discovered and we're dealing with, you can see this panoramic picture. And it paints a pretty good picture of the variability. You can see at the top of the slope, there's these brown swaths moving through the landscape. And they're even, so these are the plots, and there are even some brown swaths you can see on the outside. But in general, they correspond with plots that have shallower bedrock, so shallower soil depths for bedrock. And in a situation where there's water stress during the summer, it really shows when the corn, when the soil isn't as deep and the corn isn't getting as much water. And so looking at this picture a couple years ago, it sort of prompted some more exploratory investigation and some more research, and we brought in some other ideas to try and address this issue. And one of those methods that we've been looking into is using a topographic wetness index model. So we've been using SAGA GIS, which is a mapping tool, and if you overlay the plots on top of this, you can see the plots at the top of the slope are a lighter shade of green and yellow, which indicates lower wetness, and red actually indicates greater wetness, so yellow and orange are somewhere in between. And as you move down slope, it's sort of a graphic visualization of the picture we previously looked at of the corn on the hill slope. So we're showing, you know, drier conditions at the top and wetter conditions at the bottom, but there looks like there could be some site movement, like inner plot flow with maybe some seeps and such moving through the landscape, which further complicate issues. And so another kind of line of research that we've started down with another grad student, Lauren Vitko, is looking at ground penetrating radar, or GPR. Some people might have heard this in like CSI investigations. People use it for a wide variety of uses, but we thought it would be good for looking at bedrock and trying to get a picture of the subsurface of our site. So it's this antenna that you pull behind you as you're walking through the field, and as you're moving, you're getting an image of what the subsurface looks like. And so if light blue represents shallow depth to bedrock, we have, again, some verification of where the bedrock is. This is a limestone bedrock, and so it's inconsistent without the site. There's bedrock throughout, but it's broken or there's folds, and so we want to get an idea of where are those folds and how is that impacting the subsurface water movement throughout the site. And so this was a cool way of trying to get a picture of the subsurface. And so to demonstrate with some of the data from the past couple years, this variability that we see in our monitoring, I have a December event from 2012, and you can see the blue plots, which are highlighted with the rectangles up here, they represent a more flashy signature. So when the shallow lateral flow happens, we have runoff depth in millimeters on the y-axis and time and minutes on the x-axis. When the precipitation event starts, these plots tend to act and react really quickly and then drop off. The other plots highlighted in red tend to have a different signature. So for shallow lateral flow, these plots seem to be running and producing runoff for much longer after the event has ended, as you can see this kind of tail over here. And then a couple of the plots are really producing not much runoff at all compared to the rest of the site. So there's high variability, and we think it pretty much has to do with what's going on at those locations on the hill slope. So looking at surface runoff, it's a very different story where you have, again, runoff depth in millimeters on the y-axis and time in minutes on the x-axis. Surface runoff in general is a much smaller volume in terms of production of runoff. And so the plots highlighted in blue and the plots highlighted in red are significantly different. Blue and green plots tend to produce smaller amounts of surface runoff, where we had plots 5 and 9, which correspond with the shallower depth to bedrock, producing greater surface runoff. So one of our hypotheses is that if there's less soil for the water to move into, there's probably going to be a greater production of surface runoff on those points in the landscape. So this is just some examples of variability that we're dealing with. And to put that next to some bedrock depth, this was Hurricane Sandy, and that was about a 3-inch precipitation event, so we had a huge flow production at the site. On the top, we have surface runoff, and each of these bars represents a fraction of the total liters that we had during that event. You can see, again, these plots with shallower depth of bedrock are producing a lot more runoff than the rest. Some are producing next to none, even with such a big precipitation event. And then with shallow lateral flow, we have a couple plots at the bottom that correspond with these plots on the GPR map that are producing greater amounts of shallow lateral flow. So it's sort of this interesting combination of depth to bedrock or deeper soils, and then possibly some movement of water within the site that we haven't quite identified yet. If there's a seep that we're intersecting that's producing such high amounts of runoff at the bottom, or interplot flow. So that takes me to some conclusions and some takeaway messages. Going back to the beginning, gas emissions are pretty much cut and dry in that we have significant reduction in ammonia with injection of manure. Nitrous oxide is a lot more variable in the results and doesn't seem to be as significant from a nitrogen budgeting standpoint. However, it is significant from a greenhouse gas emissions concern. And basically, our goals with this research are to try and understand this landscape variability to the best of our abilities. And because it relates to a lot of edge-of-field water movement, and within the Chesapeake Bay, we know that nutrient management, hypoxia, algal blooms, all of that is very important. And so with water quality concerns, this kind of research will hopefully add to some of the database and in educating models and educating policy as we move forward. So as we continue to work to identify major flow paths of the subsurface, we plan on doing things like a tracer study to see if we have any interplot flow, applying tracers to the top of the hill slope and see if we have any movement down through into the other plots. And hopefully other grad students will pick up the baton as we move forward. And it's a really exciting place to work, and it's a great opportunity that I've had to do my research. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge all of my committee members, some of which are here today, and the Northeast Sustainable Ag Research Education team. It's one of the grants that we've been working on, as well as lots of people at the USDA ARS Pasture Lab in Penn State. So thank you.
We have time for one quick question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are all of your plots under the same cropping?
Same cropping rotation. Yeah, so that the only variable we have is the manure application, yeah. We didn't really have the luxury of having a no manure treatment.
Yeah.
There's only 12 plots, but yeah, thank you.
Thank you.